As Christians, we need to look beyond the obvious. I'm Dr. Fred, and you're listening to another episode of Study, Grow, Know.
Welcome to Study, Grow, Know, where we discuss theology, prophecy, and current political issues from a conservative, biblical perspective. Here's your host, Dr. Fred DeRuvo.
Hi, and welcome once again to another episode of Study, Grow, Know. I'm Dr. Fred, your host, and I just wanted to say thank you so much for joining me. We're continuing our series on Behind Enemy Lines, and one of the things I'd like to focus on or bring to our attention is the fact that it is way too easy to narrow our focus as we go through life. And we often do this out of a sense of self-protection, don't we? I mean, after all, if we took the time to take in what was happening throughout the world on a daily basis, we might, in all likelihood, wind up becoming kind of depressed or down and entirely self-focused, because much of what's happening in life right now isn't pretty. Evil is very difficult to face. However, I'm suggesting that we actually widen our focus, not narrow it, in order to arrive at a better understanding of what this world is coming to and what God is doing in the world. Even though, you know, often it seems like God isn't doing anything. We know that's not true, though, from Scripture. Now, previously, we've discussed a number of things that pertain to how the enemy of our souls is escalating his attack on mankind and the world at large in order to bring his own purposes to fruition. He's doing it in ways that appear in some cases to be somewhat innocuous, though when we truly understand what's going on, we have to admit that it is anything but that. Satan is fighting for his very survival. And because of that, he will not willingly allow anything to stand in the way of achieving his goals. So what have we learned so far in this series about how the enemy works? We've learned that there are portals in the universe through which spiritual entities, both fallen and unfallen, travel either to accomplish God's purposes or to attempt to thwart those purposes. And it seems clear enough that these beings, both malevolent and good, reside just on the other side of the dimensional barrier that God set up after humanity fell in the Garden of Eden. And that's in Genesis chapters 2 and 3. Now, because we don't see them or the dimension in which they exist, it is very easy to become too focused on the things that happen in this world as if people are creating the problems that we encounter directly. And this is not to say that people are free of accountability. It simply means that though they have wittingly or unwittingly partnered with demonic entities, the source behind the person is the ultimate and final responsible party. Now, if we go back to the Garden of Eden, we note that both Adam and Eve were guilty before God and were declared as such, yet God also promised judgment against Satan as well, and that's in Genesis 3. He didn't escape, and neither did the serpent that Satan used to tempt Eve. And anyone who aligns himself with Satan, knowingly or unknowingly, in his will to overthrow God will also be judged in the same way by God. Now, we've also learned that there's so much happening in the world today that it is very difficult to grab hold of all of it and really absorb it. We cannot keep up with everything that is transpiring throughout the globe. It's impossible. And more than that, we're not privy to the inner workings of Satan's global elite, who willingly and knowingly do his bidding. I've written a couple of other books that go into detail regarding how Satan is methodically using rock music, New Age mantras, and everything in between to gain as many followers as possible. The most annoying thing is that while he works to achieve such massive followings of people, he himself remains unabashedly in the shadows. Such is not going to be the case forever, though. One day, a man will walk out onto the world stage, and he will be completely incarnated by Satan himself. He will have all of Satan's power and all of Satan's intelligence. Just think of that. Think about what all that means. And think of what this world is building toward. Previously, we've talked about the fact that we're moving toward a one-world government. And after that happens, we will then see the world divided into 10 sections, each controlled by a king or a ruler, as highlighted in Daniel 7. Now, at that time, the Antichrist will begin to scale the wall in order to reign supreme. What we need to understand is that everything in life is moving in that specific direction. It doesn't matter what subject we're dealing with either. Liberalism has become so liberal that anything that even smacks of being conservative is under severe attack. The reason for this is because in order for the plans of Satan to progress, so that the Antichrist can ultimately take center stage, people need to get to a point of believing that we will one day all get along. But this can only occur if people stop thinking in terms of individual rights. Individuals in society must give up personal and individual rights, especially, we're told, religious rights, in exchange for the whole. That's becoming the growing mantra for the future. It's not so much individuals that make the world what it is. All of us together, as one, will do more than we could individually by ourselves. This viewpoint needs to be adopted for, quote-unquote, the good of all. And this was adopted in Genesis 11 with respect to the Tower of Babel under the leadership of Nimrod, who was really the first world leader, the first type of Antichrist. And there, because the people had literally become one in mind, scope, and purpose, God indicated that there would be nothing that humankind would not be able to accomplish because of that thinking. This is exactly the goal that the world leaders once again have in mind. The conservative viewpoint still places value on the individual person and individual rights. Something that liberalism cannot put up with. And if left in place, conservatism would forestall any chances for liberalism to become the overarching law of the entire world. It is imperative that conservatism and conservative people be eradicated in order for humanity to embrace the coming world's destiny, the New World Order. So it doesn't matter if we're talking about Islam, rock music, New Age ideas, the charismatic movement and their astral projection to the third heaven, or anything else that exists. All of these areas are playing a huge role in bringing this world to the next cosmic plane, which is to unify everyone into believing and living the old adage, quote, all for one and one for all, unquote. Gone will be individual mandates. This is why capitalism will have to be set aside, except, of course, for the very rich. And, of course, they will retain all of their money. We see history repeating itself, but few seem to notice what's going on or care because they are too afraid of the current, perceived, and coming upheaval. And the powers that be want the world to be in complete dread, because it breeds confusion, and when confusion reigns, people tend to yearn for peace above all things. And if you look at the political scene today, it is easy, very easy, to see how it works. And I tend to believe that many situations that occur in this world are earmarked for obscurity by the media, while other situations are used to create a sense of hopelessness and even abject fear among the citizenry. Certain incidents are used solely to incite. Though it seems almost accidental at times, it is clear that these situations and events are used for a greater purpose, the greater purpose of becoming one throughout society. And remember, Satan prompts people's actions and reactions. I believe this is the case with, for instance, the Trayvon Martin situation. In it, George Zimmerman shot Martin to death in what Zimmerman claims was self-defense. Now, under the current Florida Stand Your Ground law, because Zimmerman said he was being physically assaulted by Martin, he had the right to self-defense, even if it meant lethal use of it in order to escape with his own life. Now, because Martin was black and Zimmerman looks white, although he's Hispanic and white, the media unloaded both barrels on the situation, doing their best to create a racially charged environment when in actuality, it likely has nothing to do with race at all. Now, once the race-baiting machine went into overdrive, it held sway over the media and the people. The damage was being done. People like Al Sharpton and others quickly grabbed up the headlines and continued to move the situation towards solid, racially charged grounds. It was quickly pointed out that Zimmerman, who has one parent who is Caucasian, is, quote, white Hispanic, unquote. It's a label that's never been used before in the news, to my knowledge. The point was that the media was attempting to portray this as a racial incident, and how better to do that than by pitting a white person against a black person. Wouldn't go over as well had Zimmer been thoroughly Hispanic, so the white Hispanic label was adopted by the press for good measure. It was unnecessary, but it mostly served its purpose. Now, of course, it wasn't long before we saw the entrance of radical racist Al Sharpton, and things really began heating up. Sharpton is probably best known for his stance with respect to the Tawana Brawley and the Duke lacrosse team cases, in which in each case he deliberately sided with black individuals in spite of any facts that tended to exonerate those who were being accused. What's interesting here is, in the Trayvon Martin situation, once Sharpton got involved there, the race-baiting rhetoric ramped up severely, assisted by the inclusion of the new Black Panthers, who summarily put out a bounty of first $10,000 and then $1 million on George Zimmerman's head, dead or alive. Now, during this time, the Department of Justice, headed by Attorney General Eric Holder, remained publicly and completely silent. And the only thing that Mr. Obama said during this incident was that if he had a son, he might have looked like Trayvon Martin. This remark and the silence of the DOJ served to continue the racially charged rhetoric. Rather than attempting to calm the situation, the powers that be did what they could to ramp it up, even if it meant remaining silent. It became clear that the current administration wanted to see where this situation would take itself and offered nothing by way of oversight and leadership. But, you know, the absurdity of the situation quickly grew out of control, with black celebrities tweeting what was believed to be the address of George Zimmerman's parents, which turned out to be the wrong address. And this entire scenario created quite a scene, with hundreds of people gathering outside the house of these people. Turned out they had no relation to George Zimmerman's parents, and they generally made life miserable for the occupants. And to make matters worse, it was learned that the people who lived there weren't related to Zimmerman at all, but this initially did not stop people from continuing to protest. Now, just as the situation grew to its climax, a new prosecutor stepped in to say that they were putting out an arrest warrant for George Zimmerman for second-degree murder. Zimmerman turned himself in, and he's awaiting trial. And he is now out on bail for the second time. You know, this whole thing is very, very interesting. And it simply shows one situation in which the media creates a situation that foments fear and foments ideological changes that people think should happen. And whether they're based on fact or not is beside the point. You know, all of this is to say that we can sit here and blame the media for what happened, and certainly they are wrong. They're culpable and admitted to it, at least on one incident with MSNBC firing a producer in which the 9/11 recording was edited. But by doing that, by blaming the media, we forget who is behind the entire charade, and it's Satan. People are certainly used by Satan, and they bear the responsibility, but the buck stops with him completely. All the evil in the world can be traced back to him, and the humans involved in specific acts were merely puppets utilized for the moment or for that series of events. Truly, in some cases, Satan chooses to use specific human beings for extended periods of time to help him achieve his short and long-term goals. We see this with many godless dictators that have been used by Satan to create a nation the way he wants that nation created. Hitler, Stalin, Idi Amin, Pol Pot, and a host of other dictators come to mind. Individuals specifically used to further Satan's nefarious agenda. And while in most cases that specific dictator may have no real clue as to the fact that he was being used by the worst malevolent force this universe has ever known, they continue as if all these things were their own ideas. Satan controls most things in this world. It is his world. His power is far greater than anything human beings can understand or comprehend or wield. His intelligence far surpasses that of most intelligent beings among us. Satan is the one who pulls the strings, and we too often forget that because we only see the human side of things. And of course, we must remember that whatever Satan does, he does because God allows him to do it. And we're going to continue this next time, and that's our show for today. And until then, may God open your eyes to show you how truly blessed you are.
You've been listening to Study, Grow, Know with Dr. Fred DeRuvo. Please join us each week for new broadcasts that deal with theology, prophecy, and political issues from a biblical, conservative perspective.